Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the 2012 Toyota Camry.
Hey there, Tech Stuff listeners. This is Jonathan Strickland, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about something cool going on at How Stuff Works right now. I know all of you guys are really creative and you love technology. Well, now you can show us what you're made of, because Toyota is sponsoring a new photo upload widget over at HowStuffWorks.com. You can share your gadget ideas, modifications, hacks, some great tech ideas. Show us what you're made of. Let us know how creative you are. You can go to www.HowStuffWorks.com/upgrade your tech and upload those photos now. We want to see what you got.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, it's sort of catty corner. As usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
The pre-show puns, they burn. Guys, you should be thankful that you missed out on that one. What a gem that was.
Wow. Yeah. You're still seething from it.
I'm reeling is what I am. Wow. You know, I love puns, but Chris takes his love of puns to a level that I thought was unattainable by humans, and yet somehow he has managed it.
You all take that as a compliment.
That's neither here nor there for this particular podcast, other than the fact that you guys know we love puns. Waka waka. And we're going to talk today about sound files and why there are so many different – why are there so many sound file – never mind – sound file formats. And also just kind of get into the particulars of various popular sound files. Maybe we'll talk about some of the more rare ones that you can encounter too. And if any of this sounds familiar, then you're probably a longtime listener of Tech Stuff. We did an episode many, many, many moons ago on the MP3 format.
I was just a kid then.
Yeah. Boy, when we had stars in our eyes and lunch in our belly. That's back when we used to record in the afternoon.
That's true.
Anyway, so we do this in the mornings now. We want to talk about different types of sound files. And before we get into specifics, talk a little bit about categorizing sound files. There's really a couple different ways you can look at it. One is digitized sound files versus synthesized sound files.
Mm-hmm.
Now, digitized is where you're taking you're creating sound files out of bits, out of zeros and ones,
mm-hmm.
that are little tiny pieces of information that essentially tell a speaker how to move in and out to create whatever the sound is.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of different factors that go into determining how well the speaker can recreate any particular sound.
Mm-hmm.
It basically involves how much information you're able to put within that particular kind of file. For one of the more most popular sound files of this type is the WAV type of sound file.
Okay, yeah.
Right, so that's a digital sound file or digitized version of a sound file. And so there are a lot of different things that make up the quality of that sound. Synthesized is a little bit different. Synthesized is a type of sound file where the file contains information in it that says something along the lines of play this note as if it were played by this instrument. So play a C as if it were on a tenor saxophone,
mm-hmm.
right? And then the software itself and the hardware is able to take that instruction set and send out the appropriate information. So it's a little bit different. It's not looking at zeros and ones and saying, all right, move the speaker out this much, this quickly in order to create this sound. It's more like, all right, here's the sound we have to make. Now let's do what needs to be done to make it. So it's kind of two different perspectives. And a very, very popular version of the synthesized type of sound file would be the MIDI files. And MIDI files are not just for PCs. The MIDI files were really made so that synthesizers could communicate with each other.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, so if you're thinking of a digitized sound file, you might play an actual guitar and record it into a digital file and play it back,
mm-hmm.
versus plugging a USB keyboard into your computer, and using software and saying, oh, I want this to sound like a grand piano, and hitting a C and it, you know, makes the approximation of that sound rather than taking an actual instrument and digitizing it.
Right. And in general, a digitized file is going to be larger than the synthesized files. Synthesized files, like I said, are just giving general instructions to recreate a sound. Digitized has to hold all that information in it. Now, you could have a pretty small digitized version of a sound file, but that means that you don't have as much information there, which means the sound you're going to get is not necessarily going to be that nice. The fidelity will not be high.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be lo-fi.
Actually, although it is not the same, it reminds me of the differences between vector and raster graphics.
Right.
Files. You know, with a photo being made up of individual pixels and a vector file, line drawings being more manipulative. You know, you can do more with it, and it has less information in it because it can be manipulated like that.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of just the very basic analog versus digital.
Yeah.
Right? Because with analog, you've got this continuous signal that can change in pitch and in volume. But it's if you look at an analog, like a sound wave from an analog source, it's this curvy wave that's unbroken, right?
Yeah.
Whereas a digital one is either on or off, and it's a little more complicated than that, but it looks like different from an analog sound wave. So, those two different approaches define the characteristics of that sound file. Now, the other big way of dividing up the sound files, and the one that I think is one of those that most people have heard about,
mm-hmm.
And it's mainly applies to the digitized form. I mean, synthesized as well, but digitized is really where a lot of the sound file discussion revolves around.
Right.
Uncompressed, lossless, and lossy file formats. So let's talk a bit about what those mean. So
okay.
Uncompressed is probably the easiest.
Sure.
Because it just means it's a sound file that doesn't – you haven't compressed it at all. You haven't lost any information. Whatever information was in that sound file at the very beginning or the sound being recorded into some sort of device – is replicated as close as possible depending upon the abilities of that file format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you take a musical instrument, an actual musical instrument and let's say a guitar string, you pluck the string and it's going to play reverberate at a certain frequency. But there is more to it than that. I mean, as it slows, it starts to change somewhat. Some guitars hold pitch better than others, and you can kind of hear it fluctuate somewhat. But as you play a song or, with a band or an orchestra, for example, you're going to hear a richness of sound if you're right there. And that's because it covers a wide range of frequencies. Mm-hmm. In some cases, frequencies that we can't actually hear.
But sometimes those high frequencies we can't hear interact with one another and create harmonics that we can hear.
Yep. And sometimes it's something that you can feel, and that adds to the depth of the music. Like, well, I mean, we've sort of talked about bone conduction before too. Mm-hmm. What the compression does essentially is determine whether or not, you know, it should include all the different frequencies, and the amount of compression that someone would use to create a file basically says, well, I'm going to cut out this much of the info in this file. And you can dial that up or down as you decide to compress that file.
Right. So a lossless file would be compressed, but would not, you don't lose any of the actual information there. So the compression level, your mileage may vary.
Exactly.
Right? It might not be a significantly smaller file than an uncompressed file, but it does mean that you have found ways to try and minimize that file size. For one, here's an example. In an uncompressed file, let's say that you have a minute of silence between sounds.
Okay.
All right. An uncompressed file is going to encode that minute of silence the same way it would as if there were sound present.
Mm-hmm.
So that file size is going to reflect the total amount of time of the recording, not just the time when something is actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
A lossless one may encode that same file, but use an algorithm that doesn't encode that minute of silence, so that makes the overall file size smaller.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's you think about that. That could result in a huge savings of information, because you know if you're trying to capture the depth of sound that is present with an entire orchestra and there's literally nothing there, then you've recorded a lot of nothing.
Yeah.
And that takes up space.
So then you have the lossy formats. And this is what you were kind of alluding to with the frequencies that are outside the range of human hearing.
Yeah. I wanted to explain what it was there that you would lose.
Yeah. Ideally, with a lossy format, the only things you lose are things that we could not perceive.
Yeah.
So in other words, any frequency that's below or above the range of human hearing, which is about 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz, anything outside of that range of frequencies is outside the range of normal human hearing.
Well, that hurts.
and so the idea is that if there are any frequencies that are either above or below that range, those would get cut out. They would not be encoded in the file,
mm-hmm.
and that would decrease the size. There are other ways that lossy formats tend to compress files, and there are things that you can choose to do when you're creating a lossy file format that will affect the quality of the recording to some extent.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of different factors, and I'll talk about them in just a second. But lossy definitely has more of a stigma against it, because the idea is that, you know, there are times where you'll listen to music and you think, wow, that really does sound like it's a lot different from that that live performance I saw. Like you might go to a live performance and then get a digital copy of that live performance. Some bands do that, you know, where they'll record their shows and then the fans can end up buying a digital copy of something that they saw.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the encoding, it may not really reflect what you experienced. For instance, there might not be a 400-pound guy standing next to you stepping on your toe every 5 minutes.
Right.
So they might be a giant show I went to. Anyway, so the idea there being that that depending on how they're encoding it, you might not have as rich a listening experience as you otherwise would with an uncompressed or lossless format.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way that the audio is compressed and stored is called a codec.
Mm-hmm.
Now, codec and file type are two different things.
Yes.
You should not confuse the two. It's easy to get confused, but codec is...
they're related, but they're not the same.
They are related, but not the same, right. There's some codecs and file sizes that tend to go together all the time, but they are not one and the same. And some of the things that can affect how that sound file will sound include things like the sample rate. Sample rate is when you're converting analog audio into digital information. You use an analog to digital converter, or ADC. And this is what takes that signal, that continuous signal, and converts it into a bunch of zeros and ones.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of chops the signal up into segments and does this conversion. So the higher the frequency is of your sample rate, in general, the closer to the original sound it's going to be.
Right.
CD audio, if you guys, you may not remember these. There were these things called compact discs.
Right.
I remember when compact discs were a new thing.
I do too.
I remember thinking, this will never take off and let me listen to my cassette. Or vinyl album. Or wax cylinder. Or this bard that I hired to follow around and sing sagas to me.
A wire recorder.
Yeah.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, parents. Looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on. Get ready for a ride. We're gonna have some fun.
They'll explore and listen to the sounds of amazing places like farms, racetracks, the moon, and even
construction sites.
That's right, Blippi.
Follow your ears. What do you hear?
And they'll meet new friends along the way. Alongside Blippi and Mika, your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Anyway, so the CD audio is something like 44.1 kilohertz, as I recall, something like that. That's the frequency for their sample rate. And in general, you want a sample rate that's about, that's high enough so that you're going to get a good experience when you get playback. And depending on your application, you may not need a very high sample rate.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, for telephone fidelity, when you're speaking on the phone to someone else, that sample rate is much, you know, we're talking about digital phones. They're doing the same thing. They're converting an analog signal into a digital information and transmitting it and then decoding it and putting it back into analog. Their sample rate is much lower because, in general, we've become used to the idea that a telephone quality conversation does not need to have high fidelity. And if you've ever spoken on the telephone with me, you know the quality of my conversations is quite low.
Well, that doesn't really have that much to do with the sound quality.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I got off on a little tangent there.
Well, no, if you take a, I'm speaking in general terms here, but if you take a podcast file, maybe a half hour podcast file, from an audio store, and you buy a 5-minute song from that same audio store, the song is probably going to be a larger file, because there is a greater range of sound that they are trying to preserve to create that audio file than or that music file than for the voice, because the voice files don't really need to convey the same range of frequencies,
right?
And still sound good.
And beyond the sample rate, there are other factors that also inform the quality of a particular sound file, mm-hmm. a digitized sound file. The resolution. It's just, you know, sound files can have resolution just like an image file. It's essentially it comes into the how the ADC measures the incoming signal voltage, mm-hmm. and converts that into digital code. So the accuracy of that is dependent upon how many bits are used in the process. So in other words, the more data you include about the sound, the more accurately you can recreate the sound when you play it back.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if and this makes sense. It's just like any other kind of experience where you're trying to recreate something that you've seen. The more data you have, the better chances you have of recreating it accurately.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm in a room and you were to give me a stone tablet and a chisel and a hammer and tell me to take notes, those notes would be very, very limited. If you gave me a pen and paper, those would be a little bit better. If you gave me a computer with a working keyboard unlike mine, I'd be even better. If you gave me a keyboard like mine, it would probably be back to stone tablet. Anyway, that's another part that determines another factor that determines sound quality, and then data rates.
Mm-hmm.
This is really anyone who's converted any sound file into MP3 format or a format similar to the MP3 format knows about data rates. You usually have a choice of what data rate speed you can pick to convert a sound file into an MP3. And generally, higher is better. It means that you're going to have a higher fidelity experience. It also means the file size is going to be larger. And I'd say, you know, a lot of the sound files you would find, at least until fairly recently were around the 96 kilobit per second or 128 kilobit per second range. We're starting to see that get bumped up now, which is nice. Those are, a lot of the cloud services have higher bit, data rates for their encoding. And in general, that should translate to a higher fidelity experience.
Yeah. I mean, you get right down to it. Well, frankly, everybody hears sound differently, and that sounds strange, probably. Probably because you're hearing it differently than I am. No. Because, you know, it sort of depends on the range of hearing. Now, they say that, that kids can hear a different range of sound than adults. And that, you know, there have studies that have been done that, that show that women hear different ranges of sound than men do. And, you know, there are always people who, listen to a vinyl record, for example, and they'll say, "Wow, that sounds so much better than a CD." And then other people prefer the sound of CDs, which typically are compressed pretty significantly, at least to get it to you know, the audio file that you hear on the disc. Mm-hmm. So you know, everybody's different. Let's use that as a caveat, but. It's important to note that in general, the file size, the information, you want more information encoded on there because it's going to provide a richer sound. But it does depend on the codec used to create the file. And that is one of those things that, to paraphrase a song, it ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it. And I think that's probably where we're getting ready to go. But, yeah, I mean, when MP3s became the popular standard, the popular bit rate for those was, you know, 128K. You know, that a lot of people who can hear the difference in sound files would say, you know, that's crummy. It sounds terrible. But it was acceptable for a lot of people, acceptable enough that they would say, you know what, I'm willing to fork over money for an MP3 player, or I'm willing to listen to my music at this bit rate. And now that we've become more sophisticated in our tastes and have more bandwidth available to us, both in MP3 player, audio players, let's say that,
yeah,
and in our internet connections, we're having more choices available to us.
We also had an era where the speakers that were available to us, unless we were really spending a lot of money on our computer systems or what, you know, our music player systems, were not really capable of playing at a high enough fidelity for it to make a huge difference. So you could even have two versions of the same file, one recorded at a much faster data rate, and have a hard time telling the difference simply because the hardware you were using to play back the music wasn't capable of capturing those subtle differences, or even not so subtle differences.
True.
Because let's face it, some of the speakers that came out years ago were pretty, well, they were definitely substandard compared to some of the ones you can get today. Not saying that today's speakers are, you know, the height of human achievement. We definitely have a huge range on the market. And it's not always a case of you get what you pay for either. That's a totally different podcast, though. It just means that it wasn't as important back then. And also, we should talk about why there are so many different types. So we know the ones people tend to hear about a lot are WAV files, MP3s, AAC files,
mm-hmm,
for some folks. There's the ALAC files, ALAC,
mm-hmm,
or sometimes FLAC for a few people out there anyway. And then there are a lot of other ones, but those are some of the ones that are the most popular. But there are, if you were to look at a list of every type of audio file that has had any sort of traction out there, it would be incredibly long. I mean, the different types of them are, there's easily over 100. Now, some of those are project files, not audio file formats. And the project files really just have information about an audio file as opposed to having any actual audio information in it itself.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you might say, well, why are there so many? And there are several different reasons for that. One is that as time has gone on, we've created more sophisticated computers and sound chips that are able to do more than earlier ones. So they were suddenly able to support a greater number of features, but the older file formats didn't necessarily have that built in. And so new file formats emerged that were able to take advantage of the technical abilities of the new stuff that we were building.
Right.
In some cases, there were file formats that were designed to work specifically with particular types of hardware. So if you were back, if you had a computer back in the old days of the sound card boom, you know, when they had like Roland and Sound Blaster and all of those coming out, mm-hmm. you might be familiar that there were certain file types that could play on some cards, but not on others. And this could get really frustrating as a user. I remember going out and looking at computer games and looking at a computer game and saying, wow, I'm not going to have a very good experience with this because the sound file type that they went with was for a different sound card than the one I had. So I'm going to have the more basic, you know, array of sounds that is sort of the baseline for this game. I'm not going to have any of the advanced stuff because they decided to back this other sound card. So there was a division in the market, right? I mean, there wasn't a lot of standards. There was no standardized format, so you had a lot of proprietary formats.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have those as well. There's still some proprietary formats, some of which are actually used fairly widely. I think most people try to get away from those because it limits you. It limits what you can play that file back on.
Right.
It also means that a lot of these proprietary file formats were designed so that you could have digital rights management built into the file format.
Right.
So DRM, that's a, you know, that's something else that determined the different types of files. Another is the change in how we listen to these files. All
yes.
right. So, listening to it on a computer or on a sound device, you can have a certain type of file format. Back in the earlier days of the internet, when you wanted to listen to music that was going to be coming over an internet connection, you couldn't use those file formats. The files were too big.
Yeah.
So that meant that you had to design a different standard to be able to stream music, usually at a lower fidelity, and so that the file size was manageable and that you could have a specific type of software to play back those files. So things like Real Audio. Like you remember the old Real Audio days, right?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. That's dark times before the empire.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, J. Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey parents, looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride, we're gonna have some fun.
They'll explore and listen to the sounds of amazing places, like farms, racetracks, the moon, and even
construction sites.
That's right, Blippi.
Follow your ears. What do you hear?
And they'll meet new friends along the way. Alongside Blippi and Mika, your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, yeah, there's a lot of different reasons. So some of the reasons are technological. Some are based upon the limitations of that technology. Some are kind of, you know, let's face it, some of them are a little greedy. These are, you know, some file types were designed by companies saying, if we design the hardware and we design the file type, we lock people into this because they won't be able to go and buy some other piece of hardware because their hardware is not going to be able to play our file.
Yeah. And then there were some that were sort of political, as in, I'm thinking specifically of Ogg Vorbis, which was created as an open standard.
Are you down with OGG?
You know me.
Yeah.
Mostly because of the MP3 file format taking off, but, the codec used to create it, primarily the Fraunhofer, institute that came up with the MP3 file standard, the codec, you had to license that. So if you wanted to create software that would make MP3 files, you were supposed to license the official codec to do that. And then the people who started, Ogg were saying, you know what? If you want to use our standard to create our audio files, then you can do with it what you like.
Yep. Open source, unlicensed.
Yep.
So that was an attractive alternative for people who didn't want to have to, you know, go through the red tape of an official licensed piece of software. Mm-hmm. Not that that ended up being much of a problem in the long run, but.
There's still a license fee that has to be paid.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was so, had so much weight behind it that people just went with it.
Yeah. So that was, you know, that's a good example, but then let's go ahead. We'll touch on MP3, even though we have done a full episode about MP3s before. It would just take a lot of digging for you guys to get that episode.
Well, it's hard not to mention it anyway. I mean, it is sort of the 800-pound gorilla in the room.
Yeah. And so MPEG stands for Moving Picture Experts Group, which is exactly what you would expect out of a sound file. Which was working under the direction of the International Organization for Standardization and the International Electrotechnical Commission.
Nice.
Yeah. And, idea was that they wanted to create a standard to avoid this proprietary problem.
Oops.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not MPEG-3. It's MPEG-1 layer 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just complicating things.
Yeah, and there are a lot of different file extensions that fall under the MPEG audio format.
Yes. Uh-huh.
It's not, you know, MP3 is one of the more common ones, but it's not the only one. It's a lossy format, so you do end up losing data when you convert to MP3 as part of the compression.
And the codec you use to create your MP3 sort of helps determine what it is that it loses.
Yep.
Because it has a different algorithm behind it.
Right. And again, you change, depending on the data rate, you can make the file larger, smaller, and thus have more or less information about the sound file. Another thing we should, something else I should have pointed out with the different types of sound files. Some of them support metadata.
Yes.
And some do not. And metadata turned out to be really important. Metadata, of course, is information about other information. So metadata for a sound file might include things like the artist's name, the album name, other information. It could also include things like who uploaded it, who encoded it. It all depends on the codec. It all depends on the file type. So some of these file types are essentially digital fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were to download one of these files and then you were to actually open up the code and look at it, you could potentially, depending on the file type, determine who it was that originally encoded it and uploaded it, or at least who encoded it.
That's
you might
correct.
Not know who uploaded it. So that's kind of an interesting thing. And not all the files, of course, support metadata, but a lot of the really popular ones do because it's a useful way to get information in a music management software, right? So that way, because you think about music management software like iTunes, that's one of the most popular ones, so it's easy to talk about. iTunes has all the information about the artist, the album, the song title, all that kind of stuff, and that lets you sort your albums through various ways.
Mm-hmm.
Without the metadata, you wouldn't have that information. You would have the name of the file and what type of file it was, and that would be about it. So that's something else that I wanted to point out. So so along with MP3, you know, you've got the WAV files, which are again pretty popular. That's a format that was created by Microsoft and IBM, and it kind of creates an arbitrary sampling rate and a number of channels in the sample size. It's one of the first audio file types that were developed for the PC, and it's defined as being lossless. So this is the WAV files are lossless files. They tend to be much larger than MP3 files, not necessarily as large as an uncompressed version of that file, but still pretty big. And so those are two of the main ones. But then,
and you can have either digitized or synthesized WAV files.
Mm. And then there's the AAC files, which is again another lossy compression format. Depending on who you ask, I've heard people say that they prefer AAC over MP3s, in that they think AAC compression leads to less loss of fidelity.
Yeah, they were Apple adopted it for the iTunes store a long time ago as the music format, and you know the company really pushed it as being a superior format to the MP3. You know, again, it depends on whom you ask, but they started with a 128K digitization rate. Hey, I said it. And you know, they semi recently, it's not recent, but it's, over the past while here, they've upgraded that, too. So, you know, that has been a thing, but, some people feel that AAC is a better, an AAC at 128K sounds better than an MP3 at 128K encoding.
Yep. Another, Apple file format that was an earlier one developed by Apple as the Audio Interchange File Format, or AIFF.
Yeah, basically, a long time ago, I would say in the mid-90s, if you ran across a WAV file, you'd say, oh, that's a Microsoft file. And if you ran across an AIFF, you'd say, oh, well, that's a Macintosh file. It's not so clear-cut these days, but
they,
you know, it was sort of this is what we use on our operating system, and that's what they use on their operating system kind of thing.
Right. And then there was the Apple Lossless Audio Codec, or ALAC, ALAC.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one that in 2011, Apple kind of surprised folks by converting it into open source and royalty free,
mm-hmm.
Which for people who were big followers of Apple was something of a shock. They, an ALAC file, or Apple lossless audio codec file is stored in an MP4 container with the file extension of M4A. So if you see an M4A file, then that's a potential pointer that that's what you're looking at, an ALAC file. Mm-hmm. But there's so many more. There's, like I said, there was FLAC, which is the free lossless audio codec, very similar to ALAC, except that it's it was started off as open source and free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people who are real audiophiles and still download music, because a lot of them won't because of the lossy nature of a lot of the audio files online. A lot of people prefer the FLAC files. And I've seen artists who sell their music files from their websites offer MP3 or AAC and FLAC as an option. So, you know, if you want to pay a couple extra dollars, you can get the fancy hi-fi audio files.
Well, there's the Sun Audio format, which is .au. That was specifically created for Unix systems. That's another reason why there's so many different file types out there, is because there's some that were designed with specific operating systems in mind. There's Windows Media Audio, WMA. Again, developed as a competing, well, I guess standard is the wrong word, but a competing file format to MP3. And it designed to play within a Windows Media Player, and supposedly had a much more efficient compression algorithm than MP3, also designed with DRM protection in mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was one of the other reasons why Microsoft was really interested in developing its own sound file format beyond WAVE, was to try and protect intellectual property.
Yeah. Basically, DRM is just another layer of information encoded. It's essentially metadata, but it's metadata that explains who owns the file. So if Jonathan buys a song from an online music store that has DRM embedded in it, it will say, well, this belongs to Jonathan. He paid for it. And he is allowed to listen to it on his registered machines, but only on his registered machines. Or, it might say he's allowed to listen to this file for free for 3 weeks and 3 weeks only. And so when the audio player tries to go back and it says, oh, wait, it's past 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, it might disappear.
Or 20 plays.
Or 20 plays. Yeah. Or he's allowed to loan it to somebody. That's how they determine those free preview things. We'll say, oh, yes, yeah, so you can download this and listen one time for free. And you can listen to the entire song, and then the DRM information encoded in the track, when the player tries to read the file again, it will check the information. It says, oh, well, it has been played one time, and therefore I will not allow you to play it again. Sucker, go away.
Yep. So, I mean, all of these different files are all meant to do essentially the same thing. It's, again, just dependent upon the equipment you're using and the software you're using, and whether or not it's an open approach or if it's a proprietary approach. There's nothing necessarily that says one sound file is better than another, because it all depends on what you value.
Yeah.
Do you value a manageable file size? If storage is an issue, then that might be very important to you. Do you value as close to the original performance as possible, like that experience? If so, then the quality, the actual sound quality, is going to be the most important. Do you use a specific type of device? Because that will also help determine which file size is best or file type is best for you.
Yeah.
I don't think you can just necessarily come out and say, AAC files are better than MP3s, period, always, etc. It all depends on your particular situation and the equipment that you have. I guess one other thing we can talk about before we sign off is the fact that there has been for a long time, for years really, a discussion within the music industry about how the MP3 file format in particular, because it's so popular and so dominant, has changed the way music sounds, because there's a discussion that it kind of flattens the highs and the lows of what you can get out of a piece of music. And so a lot of the music is starting to sound similar to each other, because you can't reach those dynamics that you could without that, you know, lossy compression format.
That is part of it. There's also a human element involved in that, and it has to do with the way the music is produced.
Yeah.
Because I have seen examples of songs that were produced in a complete analog environment before it became so popular to have louder songs recorded on digital equipment in digital and reproduced on digital equipment. And in a lot of cases, the materials that now that loudness has become somewhat of a priority, a lot of the music is reproduced loud, and then the high end and low end are trimmed off to create a digital file. So it's almost in some cases like a solid block of sound in the highs and lows,
yeah.
And there is less dynamic range. This is a human element, and you know what people are listening for. What do I want from this new CD that I'm going to buy? Do I want to crank it up in my car and go driving down the boulevard and have people notice who I am and associate this music with me?
The answer to that is always yes.
Yeah.
Polka all the time, people.
Okay. Funny, that's also the disco sound.
Yeah.
This can be a problem, you know, because then you don't have the same, you don't get that dynamic range, and you say, well, is this something that's important to me or not? Again, it's partially a matter of choice, but it's also partially what the market is asking for and people are producing and putting out to the market as well.
Well, and there's also the argument. And this becomes a circular argument.
Yeah, it does.
But there's also the argument that the equipment that people are using to listen to music is incapable of distinguishing some of the subtleties that we might associate with earlier types of music. Therefore, since the playback equipment cannot handle it, why would you put it in there?
Mm-hmm.
Why bother to do that when you can take this other route, which is exactly what the equipment can handle? And that thus you also get to a more homogenized sound across various industries or various genres, I guess I should say.
Is it also pasteurized?
It can be. It can be pasteurized.
Vitamin D added?
Rarely do you have vitamin D added. Yeah, there's a lot of vitamin D deficiency in the music industry. It's a scandal. It's poised to break wide open.
Yeah. Yeah, there's also no fluoride.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, they did lick the scurvy problem.
Oh, yeah.
So that was good. Not literally. That would be gross.
Yes.
So anyway.
Ooh, my earbuds are wet.
Is there anything else in particular you want to talk about sound files? I mean, like I said, there are literally hundreds of different types of sound files, some of which are really obscure and haven't been used in more than a decade except on legacy systems.
Yeah, we had a couple people write us in and ask us to do this, and I'm wondering if we actually this is not the kind of thing that we can wrap up in a nice package and tie off, because it is such a diverse thing, and it's probably not going to end, because even once we standardize, we get closer to standardizing on maybe two or three audio standards. Somebody will still be working on coming up with a better way to reproduce sound, and thus will introduce a new file format for us to consider.
Right. And plus, just with new equipment coming out, things like video game systems, like handheld video game systems, they have their own proprietary sound file extensions too. Like the Nintendo ones have their own proprietary sound file extensions. So.
And then we still have people going back and trying to reproduce the 8-bit sound.
Right.
You know, back square to waves and chiptunes.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's one of those things that I do not expect us to ever reach a point where we're going to have the one standard audio file. Some of them will become kind of de facto standards just because of the fact that so many people are using it. But that's not the same thing as to say we've all settled on one particular file format. And with things like DRM in the picture, I mean, that obviously is a big issue.
It's a driver.
Yeah. There are companies that famously got out of it. You know, Apple being one of them.
Yeah.
Saying that, you know what? We have come to the same conclusion that our listeners have been saying, which is that this is a negative impact on their experience and we don't want to do it anymore. It was a good business decision for Apple at the time. There's other companies that are still firmly behind DRM, and they say that that is the good business decision for them in their particular situation. And maybe that's true. Personally, if the DRM is intrusive in any way, I just find it awful.
Yeah.
if there's a requirement, yeah, like you must have an internet connection to listen to your music. I'm like, really? That doesn't seem right.
Even better is when he goes, you must have an internet connection to listen to this music. But I have an internet connection. Why aren't you playing?
Right. You must have the band in your living room to listen to this music.
But they're sitting right here. I don't care.
Yeah. Marion calls. She can't play anything for me until after I run the actual file. And then she starts playing. That's totally not true. And if you guys don't know who Marion Call is, you should definitely look her up and listen to her music. It's awesome. So we're going to wrap this up. There are so many things we could say about sound files. We could do an episode about each type of major sound file and then do episodes where we would group 10 more obscure sound files together, and we would still be recording episodes well past episode 500 for Tech Stuff. So we are not going to do that because some market research tells us that you would all leave. So we're not going to do that. But if you have any questions about sound files in general or any sort of tech topic you would like us to address in a future episode, please let us know. Send us an email. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com, or send us a message on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle at both of those is techstuffhsw. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
See, guys, I told you we'd talk to you again really soon. That really soon is right now. I'm just reminding you that we have our photo upload widget live on the site at www.howstuffworks.com/upgradeyourtech. Toyota's giving us the chance to let you share your creativity. So send us those pictures of your modifications, your tech ideas, those gadgets that you've created, all those hacks. If you're steampunking everything in sight, put on your goggles and show that to us. We can't wait to see them.
Brought to you by the 2012 Toyota Camry.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.